Greetings, loyal listeners and newcomers alike. This is the Pun Finisher, and this is my Ask Me Anything. Well, almost anything. Actually, the questions I got were A-okay. So, let's get to this bad boy. Pretty Bookworm asks, if you could marry a fictional character, which one would it be? I'm going to have to go with Tali Zora from the Mass Effect original trilogy. Something about her, I just fell for her the first time I ran into her, and it was just her from there on out. So on to the next questionnaire. So sweet, like Anise. Number one, what is your ideal battle between any two fictional characters? You can choose historical figures. I'd have to say probably Bruce Lee and Albert Einstein. Or like Bruce Lee and Nietzsche. Just because, you know, or Kierkegaard or, you know, any sort of, because Bruce Lee was for me like a warrior philosopher. So someone, you know, who's like a hybrid versus someone who's pure psychology, philosophy sort of thing. Maybe like Socrates or Aristotle or something. Just because I want it to be a battle of the wits. Actually, you know what? Like, Da Vinci, because he was truly a Renaissance man. So I think that would be a pretty badass battle because he was pretty tough himself, and Bruce Lee. So he's both very intelligent men and both pretty badass. So what was your what was your favorite TV show growing up? There were probably a few, but I would probably go with a bastardized version of Science Ninja Team Gatchaman called Battle of the Planets. Was based on Science Ninja Team Gatchaman from 1972. I could do an entire audio on the total fuck up that Gatchaman experienced coming to the States. Some of you otaku who are really into today's, would you say shonen, or you know, where they have a team of five people. You've got the big guy and the girl, and then like the little guy, and like the two other guys, and they team up to do really like Voltron and stuff. They all owe it to Gatchaman. So I grew up on Battle of the Planets, which was reworked. They put in a sort of weird-looking droid thing that was clearly a ripoff of R2-D2. But, I mean, it was really cool because they're flying around. They've got these cool vehicles. And they're 70s clothes. Because, yeah, I was born in the 70s, folks, okay? I was at the end of the 70s, I was still... I was able to take in content. So into the 80s, that was still my favorite. And I had Shogun Warriors, which was taken from stuff like Mazinkaiser. I knew it as Mazinga. And Godzilla was even included in that, in the toys. And I had the comics and everything, which were probably taken from manga. So my introduction was really confused because anime and manga, those were things that we didn't really know here in the late 70s, early 80s. It was like we had cartoons and comic books. So when people get all bent out of shape and say that anime isn't cartoons, shut the fuck up. Yes, they are. It's a style of cartoons. Get the fuck over yourselves. Number three, if you could have any superpower, what would it be? I'm going to steal this from a friend I saw on Facebook. My superpower, I would choose to get more than 5 hours of sleep. That would definitely be the most. My superpower. Number four, what's the audio you currently like to make most that you haven't gotten a chance to yet? I would probably go with a real FAP audio. I keep looking for a reason to do a FAP audio. Also, last year for my birthday, I was supposed to do a spanking audio with the lovely and talented Shadow Obsidian, who I happened to be dating at the time, but I chickened out because reasons. Yeah, I appeared on an audio with her and performed oral sex on her, but I chickened out when it came to spanking her. I don't know. Don't ask me. Number five, if you could tell your 15-year-old self something, what would you tell him? It's not as serious as you think it is. But actually, I wouldn't tell my 15-year-old self something because, spoilers, because it would vastly change the direction of my life. And so any advice I would give myself would be useless because I'd end up with a whole new set of problems. So, and it was hard enough to get through what I did. So, on to the next questioner. Good Girl 1980 asks, I would like to know, please. Forget, I'm a British accent. What is the scariest thing you've ever done? Okay, yeah, that one is too personal. Second scariest thing I've ever done. Probably the first time I ever asked a girl out. I can't remember, so fuck that. It's not the scariest thing I've ever done. Scariest thing I've ever done. I rollerbladed on the highway holding onto the back of a pickup truck. So I was going down, for those of you who know California, I was on I-5 and we were doing about 50 at the time because I didn't want to go any faster than that. It was scary as fuck because you get speed wobbles doing that. And my friend and I were doing that and we both had to dive into the bed of the truck because we were getting too wobbly and we're like, nope, 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 nope. Two, what is a talent you wish you possessed? I wish that I could do more with my voice than I can. There are certain sounds that I would, certain tones that I would like to coax out of my voice. Yes, I can do a lot with my voice, but I would like to do more. I would like to have a much broader range. I would like to be able to sing better than I can, which is related to my voice. So those are talents I would like to have. Three, what about yourself makes you the most proud? I would have to say what about myself is that my son says, when he says he loves me, when he calls me daddy and says he wants to spend time with me, that makes me the most proud that I have a pretty good relationship with my son. And I would like to keep that going. Number four, which actor would play you in the story of your life? Well, all my life, people have said I look like John Belushi, but he's been dead since 1981 or something, somewhere around there. 1980, maybe? I don't remember. I'd have to look. So, no. And then when I was in high school, this girl who had a crush on me said I reminded her of Fred Savage. But I don't know. I don't really want Fred Savage playing me. I don't know. I would probably just play myself as an adult, as a younger person. I don't know. I would probably try to pick someone, some unknown kid that's really talented. But if I had to choose an actor to play me, I don't know. I'd just have an audition process and pick some unknown person that, not necessarily that looks like me, but could, just capture the essence. I know you're looking for, you know, someone I think, behaves like me and, you know, has my mannerisms and everything, but, being a film major, I would want to capture the essence in the performance. I would like to capture the essence better. So I'd just have this, audition process and find someone that I think is the best instead of just saying, you know, I really like the way this, celebrity actor is. And then, you know, sorry, Gigi. Going on, Penny, for your tot bod, asks, what is your favorite pun? That's like who asking a mother who her favorite child is. Two, celebrity voice you wish you could have for GWA purposes. Ving Rhames, Sir Patrick Stewart, Christopher Lee, Benedict Cumberbatch, Ricardo Montalban, so many, too many to name, really. There are so many. And it's like, I'll hear a celebrity voice. I'm like, I wish I had that voice. I really do. Number three, happiest GWA memory. She's going to kill me because this is the second time I've mentioned her. She's going to be blushing like hell. But, falling in love with and meeting Shadow Obsidian, yeah, it didn't work out, but we're still really good friends and still pretty close. So just, you know, everything involving Shadow, because she's a really great person and I love her and I'm glad she's in my life. We may not be together anymore, but it's, you know, it's really great to have her. So, yeah, I know, I'm sappy. Frantic Tumble asks, if you were a kitchen appliance, which kitchen appliance would you be and why? You know, I thought about this and I think I would be, I would probably be cursed to be reincarnated as my blender because I use the shit out of that. Because I make so many smoothies, I make soup, and I do so many other things with it. I really love my blender, so that would be why. No really philosophical reasons, no humorous reasons, just I use it so much, so it would be, I would be fated to come back as my Vitamix, because I love that thing, and so it's like, I've used this shit out of it, I continue to use it. What do you do to stay focused? I'll let you know if I figure that out. Usually I just, if I can't stay focused, I go off and play video games, browse the web, masturbate, watch porn. Well, I basically don't watch porn without masturbating. It's just this thing. I can't do it. So it's really awkward. I can't watch porn around people unless I can masturbate around them. It's really awkward. It's like, can we not watch porn? Let's do something else. It's like, okay. And what is your favorite color? Okay, everyone listening who knows me well, all together now, my favorite color is, that's right, purple. yeah, people who know me know that I am insane about purple. It's just, it's a wonderful color. Something about it just really, it's very pleasing for me. It's like purple, purple, purple. I love purple. So, Mabel Spaghetti. Okay, number one, what does your writing process look like? There's a JPEG of a chimp at a typewriter. I'm sure that's much more organized than mine. Typically, my writing process starts with something sparking my inspiration. I'll be watching a movie and there's some little scenario going on and I'm like, I didn't want it to go that way. So I think, how would I write that? And it just starts me thinking. Or I'm out sitting in a lobby waiting for an appointment and I'll see, you know, a nurse and I'm just like, I would love to fuck her. So I dream up this scenario. It's like, well, where do we meet? Who is she? What does she do? It's like, okay, she's like half my age. Let me dream up a scenario for that. You know, how would that be feasible for me to have sex with this young lady who's very attractive and looking so good in those tight scrubs, the way it makes her butt look. See, I'm already thinking about it. Or I see, you know, this older woman is like, you know, I wonder if people, if anybody tells her that she's sexy, if anybody, you know, tells her how she makes him feel. And so then I think about that. Or some, you know, I'll hear somebody else's audio and it makes me think, well, okay, that puts another bee in my bonnet. You know, it's just, you know, whenever inspiration strikes me, the gears in my head start grinding and eventually start spinning and whirring. And then eventually I just sit down and pound out a script. Sometimes I have to step away from a script because it goes in a completely different direction. Like I wanted to do some sort of sci-fi thing and ended up doing, because I had been reading an ebook, and I have something like dyslexia. So it's hard for me to read. I mean, it's painful, physically painful. My eyes start watering. My eyes go crossed. I go boss-eyed for some of those, you know. And it's about colonizing of a distant star system. And so I was thinking about that. So this guy's a scout, and he goes ahead to look for habitable planets up ahead. So he's got this faster-than-light drive. And so he comes out of cryosleep every so often to scout, but he wakes up. Every time he wakes up, he's got this raging hard-on, and he has to jack off so many times and before it goes down. And it just became this dissertation on like how, you know, regulations are like, you know, you have to do this and you have to do that, but it doesn't matter because the first thing he has to do is masturbate until he ejaculates. And he has to do this several times before he can even get to his routine that he's supposed to do. And that was not at all what I had intended to do, but that's the writing process. It's for me, and I hate to use this word because it's been co-opted by paranoid food people, but it's a very organic process for me. You know, I don't like to force my writing. Like, these are my goals. I have to stick to them. I like to go where my muse takes me, I guess, for less of a, yeah. Two, how was your experience with film school? What did you take from your time there, if anything, in the end? Film school was actually very arduous because I've been studying film independently. I've read books and attended lectures. I've watched featurettes. I've watched documentaries about the process. I've watched lecture series, anything that I could do to absorb it. You know, I've watched academic content, scholarly content. I've read these things since I was young. So going in through this with people who were like, you know, they're thinking that all you need to be a filmmaker is a camera and a YouTube account, and that's all it takes to be good. It's like, oh, well, I have an idea, a camera, and YouTube. I'm a filmmaker. Okay, yeah, you can produce content, but that doesn't make you a filmmaker. And just their disrespect for the hard work of so many people that had been put in up to the point, to get us to the point where we are now, was so frustrating for me, because I've spent my life, no matter which direction I've been going, you know, studying theater, so just putting so much of myself into studying theater and directing, technical theater and performing. Even then, I was still studying film, the science of film, cinematography, cinema, the politics of cinema, you know, what was going on behind the scenes with, you know, we're going to go away from New York. We're going to go to California because we want to get away from these studio people. And just the way that these kids didn't really care about the history. I mean, you know, they had this whole pretentious thing like, oh, well, you know, well, this picture was like really important to me. And it was clear that they were just talking about something that someone else had written and didn't really have an understanding of the films that they were watching. You know, when I wanted to discuss, you know, my favorite film, Metropolis, they had a technical understanding of the way that light was used. It was fascinating. But, you know, the way that, you know, certain techniques were employed and the sociological context of what was going on in Germany at the time when that was, when that picture was shot, and you know what this really meant to the people who made it and to the German people. It was really frustrating, and the way that they didn't want to have to follow directions, because they didn't seem to understand that, you know, when it says do this and you don't do that, and then complaining on a student forum about how the professors are just, oh, well, the professors, you know, they just don't get it, man. It's like, no, you don't get it. If you can't even follow simple directions on formatting a post and what you need to include in your post, how am I going to, as a director or a producer, how am I going to want it? If this is what you're going to do on my set, why am I going to want to have you back? You know, what is this the state of filmmaking today? Am I just being uptight? I don't know. So for me, it was just really, you know, with my age being, you know, these being, you know, 18 to 20 year old kids, because let's face it, they're fucking kids from my perspective, okay? I'm over 40. I'm 41 years old. At the time, I was 30 something. And because I went back to film school after doing all this other stuff, realizing film school is where I needed to be. It's where I should have been in the first fucking place. And then just seeing these kids thinking that they ruled the fucking world because they were young and they just had an idea. This sense of entitlement. It's like, because I want it, I should have it. No, you got to work for it, kids. Sorry, rant. I could just do an entire rant audio about this. So I should. So number three. What's the most emotionally stirring film you've seen? That's an easy answer. That's got to be Schindler's List. I haven't seen The Boy with the Striped Pajamas, but I'm sure it's right up there. The most emotionally stirring moment in a film for me, something that always sticks out, is in Return of the Jedi. Spoiler alert in case you haven't seen Return of the Jedi. But fuck it. If you haven't seen Return of the Jedi by now, then fuck. I'm not going to be responsible for spoiling it. I mean, if I'm responsible for spoiling it, then you're responsible for it being spoiled. When Luke... Well, I started to mist up when Yoda died in Return of the Jedi. But when Luke puts Vader... Because, yeah, to me, he's still fucking Vader. I mean, he doesn't put Anakin on the pyre. He puts Vader on the pyre because he's still got the mask and the suit. And he lights that pyre, and it's got the swell of music. I'm talking original edition, not special fucking edition, where they change shit and they go into, like, all across the galaxy. And I can't remember what happens in the special edition. And, you know, you got the swell of the music and tears every single time. But definitely the most emotionally stirring film. I've watched Schindler's List once. I can never watch it again. It is just too emotionally disturbing. It's impactful. I mean, it's very... Everything about that movie is evocative. Because these... Whether it actually happened the way that it's written and shot, that's not the point. The point is that these things happened to real people, and it is just no. And four, any words to live by, do something, whatever it is, do something. If you're a writer, you write. You don't call yourself a writer unless you write. If you're an artist, make your art. If you're a poet, write poetry. If whatever it is, if you want to make movies, you make movies. There are enough people out there you can get on. You go on YouTube and find people that are making movies around you. Go on some sort of social networking. Find people around you that are making movies. Get out there. Learn the craft from them how you can. You can't afford film school? Fine. Get out there. Just, you know... Hold the boom for some independent production that can't afford much. there's no such thing as a zero budget movie. Every movie has a budget. So I'm not going to say it has no budget because every, that's another rant. But you know, that they can't afford to hire technicians. They need people to hold booms. They need people to wrangle costumes. They need people to drive people. They need craft services. They need all these things. You can learn the craft by getting out there and doing the craft. If you're an actor, act. Join your local community theater. If you're just out of high school and you're looking to go to college and you want to act, I know they say you're never going to make it. You know what? Fine. If you want to make your career something else, but you still want to act, there's community theater. You can do it as a hobby. If you are an actor, you are an actor because you act. You can find things. They are out there. You can find your outlet. You have to do it. It should be your compulsion. The world needs it. You owe it to yourself and you owe it to the world to get out there and do it. Do something. Do anything. If you're a runner, get out there and run. Because it doesn't matter about the conditions. I mean, if it's unsafe, yes. But if it's raining, don't let that be an excuse. You run. You're a runner. That's your thing. If you just want to walk, just walk. Take a fucking walk. Take in nature. Do your thing. The world will be better because you did your thing. Those are my words to live by. Should have put this at the end. This inspiration or some shit. Okay, and Little Mako asks, one, what fictional universe would you live in? You knew what I would say. but Star Wars, of course. Although maybe Mass Effect, because I became very fond of that universe. But definitely Star Wars. Just I grew up steeped in it with childhood trauma, psychological trauma, physical trauma, emotional trauma, sexual trauma. I needed an escape. Star Wars was there. I was 2 years old when it came out. Now you know how old I am if you do the math, those who are in the know. It's my first real memory of doing something. I remember I went to the drive-in with my parents in my dad's pickup truck. And, we parked backwards. I sat in the back on a blanket and I watched Star Wars. It was Star Wars and something and then Star Wars again because that's how the drive-in was back then. We'd go to the drive-in to see one movie twice. It was two movies. It was the feature presentation and then some other movie and then the feature presentation again. So in the summer, we would go like at least once a month to the drive-in because my father hated going to what he would call the walk-in, your typical cinema, because it was cheaper to go to the drive-in cinema. And I'm okay. The sound was crappy, and it's projecting on a large aluminum. It's an aluminum screen that's several stories high and painted white. But I saw so many fucking movies that way. That's how I saw most of my movies growing up. So one of my favorite soundtrack. My favorite score. Would probably have to be the Empire Strikes Back soundtrack because it has the Imperial March. My favorite original soundtrack, oh, that's tough. Probably go with Pulp Fiction soundtrack. It was just a great, it was lightning in a bottle. There really hasn't been anything like it since. Maybe Guardians of the Galaxy. You know what? Actually, Guardians of the Galaxy, because Guardians of the Galaxy uses the soundtrack almost like a character in it. So, yeah. And three, if you could choose any role in any film or play, what would you choose to portray? I've thought about this a lot. I've always wanted to play Shylock in Merchant of Venice, Caliban in The Tempest. And then for film, television. There's BBC. Well, Mako, you said my people, my listeners who are in the BBC broadcast area, there is a show called Uncle. I would love to play the Uncle character in Uncle in a version made for American television. It would probably have to be on like HBO or something because there's profanity and sexual situations and stuff. But that would definitely be... See, I don't want to be, like, an existing film character or anything, unless it's, like, a reboot. Although I would like to play, I mentioned Gatchaman before. I would like to play, like, an OG G-Force member who is recruiting new G-Force members. I think that would be pretty cool. Number four, do you have any pun wisdom to share for us today? My words to live by? I guess take a chance, really, because you'll hear a lot of people tell you that, you know, you don't regret the things. You end up not regretting so much the things that you did as much as the things that you didn't do. And it's really true, because most of the things I've done, I don't regret. It's the things I didn't do. I wish that I had had the courage to attempt. Yeah. So, on to the next one. Fruity Rumpus Factory. What is your favorite soliloquy or monologue? And could you perform it if you feel up to it? I'm not going to perform it right now because this is running really long. But there are a couple. There's Ariel's Brave New World bit from The Tempest. Caliban has a bit. It's not really... I guess it would be a monologue, where, you know, he's contemplating, you know, what he is, why is he different. There's also, is it Henry the Fifth? You know, we few, we proud few, we band of brothers. You know, and of course, my go-to when I was younger was Antony's eulogy. Is it a eulogy? But we, you know, I come to bury Caesar, and he's going on about, you know, like, okay, Caesar's not perfect, but, you know, Caesar was good, and he goes on about how he's basically mocking the people who could, is he, and he's an honorable man, and like, Brutus is an honorable man. You know, those ones. One of my favorite monologues actually is from the 1989 picture Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. When Splinter is talking about, for 15 years now, we have lived here. Before that time, I was a pet of my master Yoshi. Mimicking his movements from my cage, I learned the art of ninja. I can't remember. It's been so long. I have a story about that. I can tell it later. What's the most fun production you've been in, and why? A funny thing happened on the way to the forum. I was doing shift crew, I believe. It was just hilarious, and my high school girlfriend had broken up with me, but there was still so much tension between us. Oh, no, wait, I think I'd come back from... sick from college, so I was just helping out, and I was really a mess. I can't remember. It's really fuzzy. That was hilarious. 42nd Street was fun because I was invited to perform. I didn't have to audition, although there was a lot of resentment toward me because I didn't have to audition, so a lot of the other performers were like, oh, I heard he didn't. He wasn't at auditions. How did he get here? Oh, that's horrible. What makes him so... Because I was, you know, invited to... I was a featured performer, a comedian, if you will, and it was in high school, and it really paid off that they had me on because my skills in improvisation... truly unparalleled at the school, and there were wardrobe issues, which meant I had to improvise with another one of the main cast members for 5 minutes during several performances. There was also a set piece malfunction. One of the doors wouldn't open, so my friend and one of the main cast members. Fortunately, I stayed in the wings almost the entire show. I mean, just off stage, because I got pulled out that one time. So I just stayed there just in case I needed to be pulled out. I ended up helping with costumes. So I was a dresser of a female person. I did an audio about being a dresser because it was based somewhat on that experience. I got to see a very, very top-heavy actress in her unmentionables. And, oh, that was very difficult to be professional. But as I was a professional, it didn't turn out at all like the audio, because there was no nudity, no sex. Although I did feel up her other dresser, but that was because there was so much tension between us. I mean, once the actress went on stage, the two of us just kind of like, huh. It turned out that the other dresser was bi, and so we were both so turned on. What's the coolest thing you've ever done? Probably become a father. Yeah. If you somehow got dropped into the Mass Effect universe, Andromeda or OT, what kind of life would you lead? I think I'd probably be a Krogan mercenary and just go around with like a Vorcha, like two Vorcha, and sell our services to the people who paid us enough. Because, yeah, either that or I'd be like, I'd probably just be a human mercenary and travel around with a Krogan and two Vorcha and sell our services to the highest. I'd be an engineer, of course, because that's my jam. And it would be like a Krogan biotic adept, I guess that you'd call him. And the two Vorcha would be like soldiers or my son's home. And, you know, we would just, you know, be really kick ass. And I would like romance a Quarian or something. Because that would be my thing, because I really have a thing for Quarian. Maybe Asari. I don't know. I'm not Asari. Ah, sorry, bad pun. I had to, just one. But thank you for listening. This is almost 40 minutes. Thanks for hanging out this long. And yeah, take care now. Boop.